Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. And you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? A happy new year to you.
Well, yeah, and happy Lords of Leaping Day.
Counting them down, huh?
Exactly.
Wow, well, you know, we have the Lords of Leaping already, so.
Yeah, so we're on number 10 here. I actually am keeping track of it because, as we discussed, I got my Christmas tree up late, and so I want to keep it, you know, I want to actually have a week or so of my Christmas tree up, and but I don't want to get ridiculous about it either, so we're going to pull it down this weekend. But
you pull it down on the Drummer's Drumming Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
After the drummers do their part, I guess the pipers have done their part, lords and so on down. I will forget what I'm talking about before I go any further, so we'll let that suffice. People who don't know what we're talking about, look it up, okay?
It's a song.
It's a song. You gave it away. Hey, we got a fun show tonight. This is going to be fun because I've come up with one of those. Well, we'll do a list of topics, but thematically, let's do something a little different. 10 things to look forward to in 2012 and beyond. And so each of us is coming up with five on the list of 10. But I think as we were discussing before the show started, I got more than five, and you've got more than five.
And I do too. I'm actually sitting on about six or seven.
Okay, so we might make it up to 12. We might get up to the drummer's drumming of things to look forward to in 2012 and beyond. Also, I feel really good about the weasel words I added, and beyond, because, you know.
Exactly.
It's really hard to narrow things down to a particular year. So technically, the heat death of the universe could be one of these things to look forward to in 2012 and beyond, right? I mean, I don't know who's looking forward to that or why you would look forward to that. But I'm just, you know, the point is once you've said and beyond, this is how futurists protect themselves, right? We give ourselves a little bit of buffer. Right, a little bit of wiggle room to work with, but by and large, these are things that are occurring now, or that are reasonably current, that have some relevance in the news this week, or that have caught our attention here lately, and that we see extrapolating out into the year, or you know, into the very near future. So that's kind of the idea. Before we get into that, I thought we might talk movies just for a minute. I don't know. Have you had a chance to see any of the big Christmas releases that are worth commenting on here at Fast Forward Radio?
Well, and here's the reason why. The weather's been so beautiful here and we don't have a lot of daylight. So I've just been enjoying that. And then, you know, by the evening time, you know, we're involved in other things. So, no. Answer is no. I've literally seen no holiday movie. And there's about three or four that I would really like to see. I want to see War Horse. I want to see the Sherlock Holmes movie. And I also want to see Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. I'm sorry, I have to respond to the chat room. Guys, I am super fantastic. It was a slip of the tongue when I said I was just fine. I've had no injuries. I'm not ill. I'm absolutely super fantastic. I saw Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol last night. And I think you'll enjoy it. I'm going to try not to spoil the end with a very nerdy thing that I could say about it. So I need you to go see it so we can talk about the end. But
okay.
But the thing that really struck me about it, it's a fun movie. A lot of great, you know, kind of these big action set pieces. You know how the Mission Impossible movies are. I mean, they go in and they're running some very contrived op. And things don't go exactly the way they need to, and you've got Tom Cruise climbing the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, and you've got people planting bombs in the Kremlin. I mean, just all kinds of really high concept stuff going on. But the thing I observed was the technology in it is out there a little bit, as it always has been in Mission Impossible.
Right.
Even back in the 60s, the series, they were always showing people do things that were a little bit out there. But I don't think I've ever watched a spy movie with technology that's out there that I more thoroughly believed. You know what I'm saying? It's like every one of those things I go, yep, I bet we'll have that. If we don't have that already, if there aren't people actually using that, they'll have it pretty soon. Like when the guy puts the contact lens in over his eye and suddenly he's hooked into a database and he's every face he's seeing is doing quick facial recognition, trying to spot like the asset, the bad guy that they're looking for, and is doing this quick search and quick scan. You know, I don't think that exactly exists yet, but I understand the theory behind it and recognize that eventually we'll have one of those.
I think it'd be a whole lot easier to do with eyeglasses, and I think we'll see that pretty soon. I think we're talking next couple of years. I mean, by the time this thing hits DVD, we might have that. I mean, that's
exactly that's
yeah.
The rate at which things are occurring. Yeah,
yeah.
But the fun part is the ridiculous things then are not the technology. It's just kind of the stunts they do, and of course the rubber mask thing is always ridiculous.
The rubber mask looks exactly like a human face.
Know that moves and everything. You know, because it's the other actor playing them until. Until they cut back, and that's still as implausible as it's always been, but they had that, and they have this method of creating invisibility, and I won't go into the details because I don't want to spoil the plot of the movie, but anyone who enjoys technology and like cutting edge technology and getting just kind of a glimpse into where things are going, I think it's a highly enjoyable movie from that standpoint. In addition to being just a really good spy thriller. You know, it delivers. It's a good Mission Impossible kind of a movie.
You're definitely giving it a thumbs up here, and I'll go see it, and we can talk about it and do spoilers then. So we'll just kind of – maybe we'll do it at the end of the show so we can just kind of warn everybody. If you haven't seen it, you know, we're about to talk about it. So.
Exactly, yeah. So we won't spoil it for anybody unless they've got it, you know, more or less coming to them.
Can I tell you something that doesn't suck a lot of people got for Christmas this year, and I just we got it in our house, and I just thought I'd throw it out. SodaStream was a lot of fun. it's one of these things where you take a bottle and you carbonate it, and you pour the stuff in, and make your own soft drinks at home. I thought, well, that's pretty cool, but you know what's the use of that? Well, it turns out. We've started experimenting with it and had a lot of fun with it. So, you know, trying different things.
So it's like you got a soda fountain in your house. You can have your own fountain drinks at home.
Exactly. And I mean,
what a great idea!
It's incredibly simple. I can't believe it hadn't been done. You know, 20 years ago. It's all you need is a CO2 cartridge that's it. basically. Why this hasn't been done years and years ago, I have no idea because it's not that involved. It's not even electric, you know? I mean, literally, it's a CO2 cartridge and a button you push to let the CO2 into the water. I mean, it's amazingly simple. I have no idea why it hadn't been done years ago. So
what you're talking about, though, that principle of why didn't they do this before, actually goes to something very profound. We need to do a show about this in the near future because I've been thinking about this quite a bit. We truly live in the age of possibility. We live in the age of unrealized, untapped possibility, in part because we're just on the verge of these glorious technological discoveries that are going to open up all kinds of wonderful new ways of doing things that we haven't done before. But I think almost as big is just all the different uses that we can put to technology that we're not currently doing, right? It's like we've come up with so much stuff over the last century or so that we've been pretty linear in thinking about how we're using it. I think there's a huge explosion of experience to be had with technology that already exists, just kind of being mixed and matched and being used in new ways. And as simple as it sounds, having a soda fountain in your home is kind of an example of that. It's like, oh yeah, well there you go. That, you know, why didn't we think of doing that before? I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing. Another good example of that is when we talked a few weeks ago about it wasn't SpaceX, but it's someone else who's launching those rockets using 747s that have been put together. Right? It's like you take existing technology and you use it in a completely new way. I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Just, you know, we've had it sitting around. Let's recombine it and do things a little differently this time. Why don't we try it a little differently? Yeah, I think
exactly.
That's great.
And then you mix it with the technology of the internet, and you order it off Amazon, and then you got a soda fountain in your home. So
exactly, yeah.
There you go.
Well, we need to get started with this. 12, if we have any chance of getting done.
If we have any chance at all of listing out our 10 things to look forward to in 2012 and beyond, I'm going to start with one that caught my eye today. I think it is absolutely wonderful. The story was in IEEE Spectrum, and the headline was, "Goodbye Wheelchair, Hello Exoskeleton." This year, the ExoBionics Exoskeleton for Paraplegics hits the market. So this is one that truly we can see in 2012. And what's great about this is a couple of things. First off, there's a picture of a woman using it, and you can see she's a young woman and she's paraplegic clearly, and she's upright. And if you watch the video, she's walking around. She's mobile in a way that a wheelchair would never enable her to be. This is a completely new kind of experience for people who have been stuck in wheelchairs for years now. You know, I mean, that's been the only real solution for, and it's a good technology, and it's a good technological solution for people who are paraplegic. But now we've got something that is just a quantum leap, that is just a major new step in the right direction. You know, one day I think we'll have stem cell therapies, we'll have nanotechnology, nanomedicine, and any of the kinds of damage to bodies that cause people to be paraplegic or quadriplegic can be corrected and people will be able to walk on their own. But in the meantime, the notion of people who couldn't walk getting up and walking around is just absolutely wonderful. It's the reason that I'm interested in technology, I think, to begin with. It's the kind of transformative experience, the kind of people's lives being improved through, you know, our genius, our ability to picture the world differently, that I think is so exciting. And the other piece about this that I really love is this is one of those things we've been tracking, right? We've been tracking it. The Speculus, we've talked about it on the show. There have been more and more prototypes along the way, and we were writing about this 4, 5, 6 years ago. Hey, here's another prototype. Here's another guy using an exoskeleton in place of a wheelchair. Well, this is not a prototype, okay? This is these are going to market, and people will be able to get these from, you know, medical supply stores. People will be prescribed these by their doctors, and you're actually going to see them out on the street because this is now a technology that has arrived, and I think the world's going to be a tremendously better place for it.
Absolutely. I saw something about 10 years ago. This doctor had come up with basically a wheelchair that allowed standing. Okay, I mean, it was it was basically a shell that he had around himself. He was paraplegic. He was an MD that was paraplegic. He wanted to make his rounds standing, and so he built this thing. I mean, he had it built, it just basically was an electric wheelchair. It had a lot of electric wheelchair parts, but it allowed him to stand. And he talked about the psychological benefit of being able to see people eye to eye. That, you know, if you've never spent a day in a wheelchair, you don't understand that when you're talking with other adults and they're looking down to see you, how that just, I mean, it just doesn't work. You know, if you can't see physically eye to eye with somebody, that really works on your psyche. And you feel disabled for that reason as much as anything else. And so, just allowing himself to stand up in a wheelchair and, you know, be able to make his rounds, see patients in a standing position was huge for him. You can imagine how great it is, you know, for these folks now that are walking with the exoskeletons. Basically, you know, the world just opened up to them. You know, they can take stairs, they can do everything now. So it's just really, really cool and, you know, awesome.
It's a terrific development. It's a great way to start 2012 with that headline. Absolutely. Okay, what do you got for us? Let's keep you coming.
Getting appy. Okay, apps have been huge over the last about 3 years now. What we're talking about with apps are software, obviously, but we're talking about software that's cheap, it's for a specific purpose, it gets the job done, and it's usually, you know, when you're thinking of apps, you're thinking of smartphones and things like that. Well, reading today about medicine, basically doctors are, you know, going to start prescribing apps that can help you keep up with, different regimens that you need to be on, whether it be exercise, diet, taking medicine at particular times, things like this. Apps are going to become a big part of the medicine and, quite frankly, allow us to do a lot of things for ourselves. There is a company called Scanadu, which is trying to claim the medical tricorder X Prize. Have you heard of that, Phil, the medical tricorder X Prize?
I had not heard of it. I think it's completely awesome. I mean, you say those words, and I know exactly what you're talking about, of course. But,
exactly. Dr. McCoy's machine, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is, you know, $10 million. That's huge. That's a big $10 million is what if you create a device that meets these criteria as a, you know, a version one medical tricorder, you win the prize. Scanadu is after it, and they're bringing something to market this year. And can you imagine how cool that would be to have a device in your home that, you know, your kid's got a cough, you scan him, it says, you know, his temperature is this, you can do a little swab on his tonsils, and it does a medical analysis on it. And you don't have to depend, of course, on the computer within the device. It would be cloud enabled, and so it could have this, you could have supercomputers elsewhere running diagnostics on your kid. That's the sort of thing we start seeing as early as this year, and that's so apps in medicine. Apps on your TV. We've got it's an ongoing rumor that seems to be getting more and more credence that Apple is going to bring out a television for your living room, of course, a big part of that will be their app store, and allowing you to bring whatever applications you've had. And of course, once you get a television, there'll be new things that would be, new apps that would be geared to just your TV. So that's a big deal. Also, apps for your car. You know, cars are becoming basically computer centers in a way, that's a big part, a big thing that we're going to be seeing here as soon as this year. So that's all coming stuff. So
we're talking apps that would actually run on your car.
That's right.
So you would
log on to the GM App Store and buy an app that would would add this functionality to your car, that functionality. Exactly. That's what we're talking about.
Wow.
Oh, there's one more thing. Robot apps. There are app stores opening up now to sell apps to run on little home robots now. I think that's neat. I think it's neat that people are buying robots for whatever purpose. But, I think the idea of, you're going to buy something, and you don't know when you buy it all the things you're going to use it for. That's one thing that the smartphone has given us. My smartphone is worth more to me now than the day I bought it, and it keeps getting better and better and better because people are writing, software to make it do more things.
Right.
And so it's more. And I think that idea is we will see it transcend to other devices starting this year.
Amazing. The age of apps. The world's getting happier.
That's right. So, don't worry. Be happy.
Be happy. I love it. All right. Well, I tell you, Stephen, you're really expanding our vocabularies around here. You've added in the last few weeks coffee shopification, right? And now we're getting appy, and it's all, you know, it's thanks to you. Looking forward to that. All right. Well, I've got since you mentioned TV, let me read you a this is from MIT Technology Review. Would you pay $8,000 for a TV? Gosh, I wouldn't. But the discussion on this article, and I'll put the link up in the chat room, is that TV has kind of actually contra to your point just now. TV has kind of peaked as a technology we've reached a point where the retailers don't feel there's an awful lot they can do. You know, the screens can't get much bigger. 3D was going to be this. Was supposed to be this big thing, but it hasn't quite, it really hasn't taken off yet.
So far, it's
kind
of flop.
Yeah.
So far, it's flop.
It's not big. Well, actually, to me, that reminds me an awful lot of what you would have heard about HD about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's an adoption cycle on these things. But what caught my eye in this, the $8,000 TV. It reads, LG will soon be introducing a 55-inch TV that's just 3/16 of an inch thick and weighs just 16.5 pounds. And Samsung is expected to introduce a competing set with similar specs. I mean, imagine that, a TV that 3/16 of an inch, that's less than a quarter of an inch. Am I right? Am I doing the math correctly?
I think so. That's right to me.
Yeah, because 2/16 would be an eighth. Yeah, it's a certain number of eighths. Anyway, the point is, that's an amazing piece of machinery. That's going to be your $8,000 TV. But I actually believe, coming back to what you were saying just a few minutes ago, I actually believe there's probably going to be a bigger market for smart functions on TV. And for apps that run on TV, and for as someone mentioned in the chat room just a minute ago, TVs being essentially more like computers, probably than there will be for an ultra thin TV, because it's like, you know, I've got my big screen mounted on my wall, and you know, it's massive compared to that. It's probably 2 or 3 inches thick, right? So you know, to compare it to one that's 3/16 of an inch thick, but I'm like, well, yeah, but I don't need that. That 2 3/4 inches, right? The TV's already up there, so I'm probably not going to go spend $8,000 just to save that amount of space. It'll be an item that people will buy, you know, from a status standpoint. Hey, I got one of those really super thin TVs, but unless the picture is bigger, unless the picture is clearer, unless it will do more, you know, that I don't think that catches on big until it becomes. It becomes cheaper, because I don't think it's that big of an advantage, but it does sound pretty cool, doesn't it?
It does sound cool. I just, you know, my thought is, you know, where are the various boxes that you always hook into a TV? I mean, until they disappear into that small, you know, profile, you know, I don't, you know what I'm saying? If I've got to have these, you know, like a 4 or 5 boxes connected to my television, and they're underneath my TV, it doesn't matter if my TV is a foot thick or a quarter of an inch thick.
Right.
If I've got to have all those things below it. I guess I just need to get a little more sophisticated in how I get content to my TV before I'm really hankering for that quarter inch thing that I can just mount on my wall like a picture. But
well,
anyway,
it's interesting cool. You mentioned that, because come to think of it, the apps that you're talking about that run on TVs will probably replace a lot of those boxes.
I would think so.
Yeah.
We'll
be talking about software. We'll be talking about the computer, which it truly will be, the TV having a lot more processing power, being essentially a computer and running those, you know, you'll be running a Roku app or a Wii app on your TV rather than actually having a physical box connected.
You know what I'm looking forward to is my television watching me, so that I can, like, or listening to me, so that I can say TV on, channel such and such, I want to watch such and such, and and that way, if I lose my remote, or, you know, I can just put the remote in a drawer and forget about it. If you have a television that you can talk, you know, you've got Siri on your TV. That's what I'm looking forward to.
You know, they did a great bit on that on 30 Rock. I think it was last season, where Alec Baldwin invented that. He was trying to impress, you know, NBC has been bought out by, in real life, Comcast, and 30 Rock, it's this hokey company called Cabletown. So he's trying to impress his new bosses. So he invents this voice activated TV. And of course, the problem is all the programming that he goes to has people saying things that turn the TV off or that change the station. Or like, they go to this. It was one of the CSI, not CSI, one of the I don't know, one of the crime shows on NBC, and it was obviously the actors from that show. It was this real intense scene, and the guy's going, "Oh, I just can't take this anymore. I'm just going to have to go home and erase every program on my DVR," and the TV just starts to erase. He's like, "Oh, come on, you got to be kidding!"
No, stop! Yeah.
And he makes it stop, but by then the boss is not impressed. He says, "Oh, I'm sorry, you know, obviously this isn't ready for prime time. I got to go." And Alec Baldwin's left alone there, and he goes, "Crap!" And right then, Keeping Up with the Kardashians comes on the TV.
That's awesome.
Absolutely brilliant.
That is great. I love that. Oh man. Well,
so you
got
to be careful. That one's going to be. It's going to have to be very sensitive to your intention, not just to the. The words that get spoken. Okay, so how many have we done so far? Who's keeping track?
Okay, I did one. You did one. And so
two. Oh my. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. We're not.
No,
we're
done,
not.
No, that was three. That makes three. So you can do one.
Okay.
That'll make four. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we go. SpaceX gets busy. NASA recently announced February 7, 2012, as the target launch date for the upcoming mission for SpaceX to visit the International Space Station. That's huge. I mean, we're getting back to the capability to reach the International Space Station fairly quickly upon the retirement of the.
That is
space
so awesome. When are they going?
February 7. I mean, we're talking next month.
Wow.
And so now it's an unmanned mission. They're just seeing they got the capability, to get it there and everything.
But they'll send a capsule up. It'll dock with the space station, right? If
mm-hmm.
someone
That's
were
right.
in there,
and,
able,
I think they even
yeah.
plan to have some, I think they even plan to have some, supplies for the station. You know, it'll be there, but it's completely unmanned mission this time. So
very cool. That's exciting.
Very, very cool. Yeah. So,
you know, I
recently.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that's it. I think it's just awesome they're doing it.
It's a terrific story. I recently liked SpaceX over on Facebook, and I love going to that page. I'm not completely caught up on everything going on there, but there's so much excitement on the SpaceX Facebook group. I recommend it to anybody who wants a juice of like positive feelings about our future in space, because SpaceX has a they've got it, and I think they're right to be enthusiastic, because they're really making tremendous steps forward here. This is very cool that they're sending up an unmanned probe to dock with the space station. Any word on when they'll actually be launching a person up there?
Well, no, I don't have word on that. But it's provided that they demonstrate that it's safe, I would think that they could turn around pretty quick. So anyway, I think it's just awesome, and they're they're doing it old school, and I kind of like that too. I mean, we're talking, this is just a capsule, a big huge capsule,
yeah.
But it's more Saturn V than space shuttle, and a lot of it's just based on the fact that it turns out that that's just a safer system, and so that's very cool.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're gonna keep rolling through this, because we've got a lot of them to cover, and I saw that. Somebody jumped the gun on me and put this in the chat room already, but on Kurzweil today, there was a story, Fountain of Youth, young stem cells make rapidly aging mice live longer and healthier. I don't know if you've seen this, Stephen, or as I talk about it, if this sounds like something that we've talked about before, but it's feeling like this could be a major development. They've got these mice that are bred to age too quickly. And these scientists have injected them with they're not stem cells, they're progenitor cells. They're cells that create stem cells. And instead of continuing to age and dying off, these mice have gotten really healthy and lived like 2 to 3 times as long as they were expected to live. Now, I can't remember if this is the same story we talked about before or if it's just the fact that both of
Well, you know what, I think Phil, that there was something very similar about a year ago that they did, but this is new. They're using progenitor cells, and I think that they're getting an incredibly positive response that they're getting excited about. So, hey, you know, the more they know about this, the better. I'm ready for human trials to start, and I'm ready to sign up for it, you know?
Yeah, give me a boost, you know? These mice that here's what's cool. These mice, these rapidly aging mice, usually live from 3 to 4 weeks, and the outliers, I mean the really long lived ones now from this treatment, have made it as far as 66 days. Okay, so more than 3 times as long as their longest expected lifespan. There's all kinds of caveats around that. It's mice. It's not people. These are weird mice that age too fast. But even when you take all that into consideration, it seems like there's something very powerful at work here. And I think we're getting much closer to true breakthroughs towards anti-aging, real medical treatments that are going to extend life and put us on course. And I think, you know, that's in line with one of your predictions, I believe, Stephen. I think we're counting down to having that capability within the next what was it? You had said 10 years out about 5 years ago. Is that right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think it was. I had said 10 years out in 2004. So we're getting pretty darn close. 2014. I thought it would. Now I had a lot of weasel words in my prediction. Basically, I'm saying.
Did you say
it'll be it'll be the version 1.0, and it might even be that it's marketed as a treatment for some other disease like diabetes or obesity or something like that that has the added benefit of actually turning back the clock, but they're not saying it, things like that. But that's what I said. 2014 was my target year for that. So. I would love to be right about that, or even wrong if they get it this year. I'll take it. You know, whenever they can deliver it. And
you know what, Stephen? If you're wrong and it's 2 years later, I'm going to give you partial credit. I'm going to give you loads of credit. And I'll still be happy it showed up. I'm not going to be like, no, I won't take it now because Stephen said it would be here by 2014.
Yeah.
I will not take. I promise, I won't take that attitude.
Oh, good.
All right. So what's
sort of. Okay, solar grid parity. Now, I took advantage of the fact that you said and beyond, Phil, because I wanted, and I just wanted to talk about this. It's a cool map. I'll put the link up in the chat room in just a second. That and it's sort of an animated map that you click the button and it starts playing and it advances through the years and you see places on this map of the United States start popping up that it reaches solar grid parity. And I thought it was pretty awesome. 2015, now, what they mean by solar grid parity is without any, you know, government money being pumped into it at all, no tax, you know, benefit at all. You just go out and buy it because, frankly, that's the cheapest way to get electricity. And it's going to happen much sooner than a lot of people realize. 2015 for Southern California. Now we've already talked about Hawaii, and I've made the argument. I've made the argument that Hawaii is already there. Okay, lots of sun in Hawaii, and all of their electricity is by diesel generators. It's kind of expensive electricity there, so I think we may already be there for Hawaii, Southern California by 2015, my area by 2019, and then Denver. Phil, your home, your home area by 2020,
yes.
Just 1 year later.
By 2020,
so,
there
you are.
Bring it on,
so,
man.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I look forward to, you know, look forward to that, obviously. That's one of those things that, you know, politically it's sort of a firestorm when it doesn't need to be. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just going to give it time. It's like anything else. It's going to happen, you know.
Right.
And it's actually the advances that are being made in solar are outpacing Moore's law. So, you know, give it a break, guys. You know, on the conservative side of the fence, it's not you know, just because it's been a little bit one of these things, boondoggles, where, you know, lots of government money has been put into companies that have gone out of business. You know, it doesn't make the whole idea wrong. It just means that, give it time. It'll happen. So that's the deal on solar.
It's kind of like 3D TV. I mean, it's on a bigger scale, but it's the same issue. You know, these things, they take their time in unwinding, and then suddenly they show up, and it's so much bigger than you ever realized that it was going to be. This is why I always just kind of slap my head when I see these arguments about peak oil and we're going to run out of energy and there's not going to be any energy. I know there are issues around that, and there's all kinds of geopolitics involved in oil, and there's all kinds of questions about the environment, and you know, there's so much that can't realistically be done with other sources of energy. Even when you take all that in consideration, whenever I hear that kind of talk, I can't help but think, are you paying any attention at all to what's happening with solar power? Because it's happening, you know. I mean, it's happening fast. I think the results take longer to show up than people expect, but the changes are actually occurring at an accelerating pace, and the world's going to be very, very different when the market is saying, "Hey, I want solar because it's cheaper." I mean, that really opens things up, doesn't it?
That's right. What I look forward to is when Rush Limbaugh puts solar on his house. I'm not dissing him in any way. I promise you, I'm not. He's just one of these guys that he's constantly, it's a boondoggle that, you know, solar will never happen. Well, yeah, it will. It will. You're right about a lot of things. You're wrong about that. So I look forward to seeing him put that on his mansion, because it is the cheapest way to electrify his home. So yeah, and all the rest of us as well. So that's going to be cool. Just a related story. I know we don't have a lot of time, but building a better sun trap. There are three ways to make the sun, to use the sun to make electricity. One is photovoltaic. The other is basically heating water, making steam, running a turbine, and then using the heat directly, which requires sun traps to use the thing to make electricity. And they just are coming out with better ways of trapping the heat to do that all the time, and that's a pretty neat story. I'll try to also get that one up in the chat room too. So
very cool, very cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're counting them down. We're up to let me just clarify. Does the building a better sun trap count as a separate development, or is that just part?
No,
of
No,
solar?
I believe that is just part of the whole solar is going to get better and better until it's the best deal in town kind of deal.
Okay, we're up to six then. So if we're going to make it to 12, we've really got to pour on the speed here, but that's okay. I think we're doing well. We've hit our stride here, and we've got lots more great stuff to come. Let me talk about, let's see, where do we go now? Open source cancer research. I had never heard of this, but if you go to opensource.com, their lead story there on their blog is about open source cancer research, and this is a growing movement. You know, we've had Christine Peterson on talking about self-directed, do-it-yourself life extension, and we've talked to folks about biohacking and kind of life hacking and self-hacking, and those movements are all great. This is beyond that. Okay, we're talking about people independently taking on pieces of medical research and doing the work. It's almost kind of like a term I invented earlier this week over in Transparency Revolution, exification, where we've got MITx and TEDx and like, you know, the American Cancer Institute or National Institutes of Health X, okay? What we're talking about is people who aren't necessarily even scientists taking on pieces of the body of research that needs to be done and making significant progress towards curing cancer. It's I think a sign of things to come. I think we're going to see a lot more of this sort of thing in the future. There are, of course, all kinds of red flags that go up when you start talking about this, because people start thinking about, well, if it's something medical, you should have a doctor and they should be licensed in it. And that's true if you're talking about providing treatment. But when you're talking about doing fundamental research, getting the results, publishing those results, having them reviewed by peers, I don't think that those concerns are nearly as valid. I think it's a huge development, and I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of major stuff comes from open source. Probably not only cancer research, but research into a lot of other medical areas as well. We can expect to see some huge stuff happening there. I'll tell you, at opensource.com, let me tell you what the names of the tabs are. Okay, at the top of the page, open, which I guess means just anything at all: business, education, government, health, law, and life. Imagine the open source versions of all of those, and I think it's entirely possible that that we're going to be seeing a kind of distributed, handed out to the people taking on their own responsibility for it version of each of those. But as we certainly have seen in education, but I think there's something really exciting about the thought of progress, especially around something like cancer. Which is being made on a number of fronts today anyway, now being accelerated even further by so many more people suddenly becoming involved in it. So, huge story, and something we're really looking forward to hearing more about.
I found it interesting reading about Steve Jobs and his fight. He just decided to take it on and basically, got some of the best experts in the world to work with him on his cancer. He had his genome sequenced. He had his cancer's genome sequenced, and they spent time looking through the genome of his cancer to decide how best to attack it. That level of involvement in his own care, the idea was if I'm going to try to cure my own cancer, and if I can't, then what I'm going to try to do is make advancements so that others will benefit from what I'm learning here. So absolutely awesome. There's no one that is going to be more motivated to work on your own disease than you will be. Phil. It reminds me of the Lorenzo Oil story. Do you remember that?
Exactly. One? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had a kid that had this problem, And the parents were told over and over again, there's nothing we can do, and they decided that we're not going to give up, and they kept working. Often these stories end sadly, why not try? And so I think we'll see more and more of that, because the power of, the internet and other ways of learning things. I mean, it's increasing our power to do everything, and so this is just one thing that it's affecting. Okay, so along the same lines, this is another cancer story. Brian Wong posts that a breast and pancreatic cancer vaccine could begin human trials by the end of 2012.
All right.
So, again, cancer's got to go. You know what I mean? It's just too many people. Yeah. We've lost too many people. Too many people have been made sick by this problem. This is an issue that we have to deal with. I'm grateful that we're living in exciting times involving cancer research. So,
and I'm sorry, it was breast and what kind?
Pancreatic.
Of course, pancreatic.
The current state of the art in medicine is that. If you get that diagnosis, I mean, you get your affairs in order. If there's something we can do to help prevent it, taking a vaccine or whatever, let's do so.
Yeah. It's the disease we can't cure fast enough. I think we're both agreed with that. My father has had repeated repeated bouts, and it's a testament actually to the times we live in that my father's still with us, actually, that he's been through it repeatedly, and in fact we're awaiting this week we're awaiting biopsy results once again, and you know hoping that we're not going to have to go through another big long course of treatment, but the progress is indisputable. The toll that it takes on people, the suffering, is something that I think we just won't tolerate. And that, you know, that's why it's a ripe movement for open source, and it's why there's I think so much effort that has been put towards it. So, yes, I think we're going to make great progress in 2012 on cancer, and that's terrific to see that two really terrible forms of cancer might be treated with a vaccine. Wouldn't that be great? Here's hoping. Okay, let's see. I'm working through mine so fast. Okay, Lost World of Sea Creatures. Here's a story that just broke today, and I think we're going to be learning a lot more about this over the next few months. But you've heard about how these ocean vents, these vents at the bottom of the ocean have their own like unique ecosystems around them, with their own unique forms of life. Well, they found one near Antarctica that's like the mother load, okay? Because it's not just interesting forms of bacteria and interesting little, you know, microscopic creatures. We're looking at unidentified species of octopus. Sea anemones, sea stars, a whole new set of different kinds of yeti crabs, just a whole host of sea creatures that no one had ever seen before, that we didn't know exist, and suddenly there they are. It harkens back actually to a discussion we had a few weeks ago about the, you know, when is the age of discovery really over? Well, it's not really over as long as there's still more amazing things to find out. And it's very cool to think that there's probably a lot more species of animals yet to be found somewhere in the ocean. Kind of going back to what I was saying about the possibilities, the possibilities for where life might be on this planet, still might have some surprises for us. And I'll put the link up in the chat. If you look at this octopus, he is a very, very interesting looking creature. He looks like an Antarctic octopus. I'll tell you, he's I should say it. I really have no way of knowing what sex this octopus is, but it's just this really white looking thing, and it's in this eerie light because obviously you're down deep in the water. But I think it's really exciting that a discovery like that can be made at this what we take to be late date, which turns out not to be too late at all, and that there's a lot more for us to learn.
You know, it's cool that this particular ecosystem, these ecosystems, are completely independent of our ecosystem. There's no sun, and you know, the energy that these ecosystems are based on is not from the sun at all. It's completely from the heat and chemicals that are coming out of these vents, and I think that's remarkable, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot for us to learn about how life works, I think, from studying creatures like this.
Yeah, it could be that when we find life on other worlds, that it might have more in common with something like that than our surface life. But anyway, very, very cool.
Entirely possible.
Okay, so I shot over to a website called Future Memes. It's futurememes.blogspot.com, and they've got their own list of 10, Phil. Now, we have dealt with a list of 10 things to expect in 2012. And we've covered several of these things, but mm-hmm. I thought I'd just mention, one here, cloud computing, big data era, machine learning. So basically what we're talking about is, you know, we've got cloud computing already. We think we have big data, and we think we have machine learning. The idea here is that it will come of age, and that normal people, will be using more and more of these resources, probably by use of their smartphones and other devices. Since we will all be using the cloud more and more, When we need the extra computer power, it will be there. And when we don't need it, we're not paying for it. So that's a cool development.
You know, I was at the company Workday. They do HR and financial software. I was at their user conference in October, and one of their claims to fame is that they're the first big provider of these kinds of enterprise systems that sit almost entirely in the cloud, completely cloud-based. And the theme of the show was Citizens of the Cloud. And actually, I have a podcast over on Transparency Revolution with that title, just talking to people walking around the show floor and talking to them about what's it mean to you to be a citizen of the cloud. And it's very interesting to see this shift taking place, because the cloud has kind of snuck up on us. And we had things living in the cloud, like YouTube and our Amazon accounts and things like that. And suddenly productivity software was sitting there with Google Docs. Now you see enterprise software moving there. We really have become citizens of this other world. I mean, it's almost the beginning of the of true cyberspace when you think about it. The resources, as you mentioned, are there for us, but we're interacting with them very differently, and it's this really ubiquitous model for computing. The computer that never shuts off, and that there's as much of as you need. I think it's going to be a while before we really get our heads around what we're going to be able to do with the cloud, but it's going to be huge.
You remember when we first started doing writing on the blog, Bill? We collaborated on some of our posts, and we used a tool called Writely. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Writely, of course, is now known as Google Docs. It's the
Google Docs.
It's the Google word processor. It's bought by Google, and then they polished it up and made it part of their software that they offer, including spreadsheets and things like that. It's just a great idea, and it allows people in remote locations to work together, and that's more and more. I find that more and more of my work ends up there.
Have you had this happen where you find yourself suddenly frustrated and annoyed because you saved something to a local disk?
Yes.
And you go,
yes,
why did I do that? What was I thinking? Saving it to my hard disk, what used to be the hallmark of good, safe practice, right? Save often, right? Save your work. And it's like, oh, I just kept it on my local disk. What good is it for me there? I'm over here now. It's not going to help me now. It's a different world.
Well, this this podcast is all cloud. I mean, I always use my laptop to do this show. Well, I'd uploaded the music for tonight, and I'd done a few prep things earlier in the day, and of course, then I leave my laptop at work, and I had something I needed to do. It's no big deal. I mean, it matters not at all that my laptop was left at work. I just pulled out another laptop here at the house. I said, "Sorry, Matthew, I'm borrowing your machine."
I got to do a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, and of course you pull it up, and all my stuff is there, and that's becoming what you kind of expect. When you're doing things nowadays, is that it doesn't matter what machine you're on, and if one machine crashes or if you run it over or someone steals your laptop, any terrible thing like that, you're up and going again in 5 minutes with another machine. So. That's huge. So yeah,
absolutely. All right. Well, we're closing in on our time here. I want to talk very quickly about people walking on water, and I have I've shared the link for the YouTube video. I encourage everyone to watch the YouTube video about liquid mountaineering. I stumbled upon that. I was watching a video on a completely different subject. It was just showing people doing all kinds of amazing things, and one of the amazing things it showed was these guys apparently managing to take a few steps across the surface of water. And when you watch the video, they talk about there's this whole theory behind it. If you can get going fast enough, if you can angle your feet properly, if you wear the right equipment, it's like skipping a rock across the water. You can actually skip your feet, skip your body weight across the water, and you see these guys getting a little bit better and better at taking a few steps on the surface of water before they inevitably crash in. Well, I watched it once through and was completely enthralled, then watched it again and realized that it was too good to be true. Stephen, you watched about, what, I don't know, a minute of it and immediately said it couldn't be real. Is that right?
This is a crock, Phil. What are you showing me? This is complete, you know, it's complete bunk.
I think my desire for it to be true was stronger than yours. That's all. I really, really wanted it to be true. So it takes me longer to get to where you immediately go. And I think that's the lawyer thing too. You know,
maybe. I don't know.
you jump to the, you cut to the chase. But anyway, I'll also put up in the chat room this link to Popular Mechanics debunking of this brilliant hoax video of these guys doing this. Of course, you can't really walk on water. And Sally points out ice fishermen. Yeah, you can walk on water if it gets stiff enough. That's a good point. In explaining it, they talk about these lizards, these basilisks. They're also known as the Jesus Christ lizard. They're lizards, you know, that can walk across the surface of water. And they talk about how come they can do it, but we can't. And here's what it says. Jamaican runner Usain Bolt, current world record holder for the 100-meter sprint, ran 10.4 meters per second. But the two Harvard biologists who studied how the basilisk runs on water found that in order to mimic the lizard, a human would need to run at almost 30 meters per second, a velocity beyond human ability, quote, unquote. So we're now well beyond 2012, but something I'm looking forward to is when running three times as fast as Usain Bolt is not beyond human capability. And when someone can run that fast, you actually will see people running across the top of the surface of water. That's what it would take. Apparently, that would be a huge effort. The energy output, the power output of a person would have to be about 15 times greater than what a person can currently do. So we'd have to be talking about some very advanced biological enhancement or nanotechnology or something like that at work. But those scientists in telling us that it's impossible gave me the hope of saying, oh, I see, it's only because the fastest man alive only goes a third as fast as he would need to. All we have to do is correct that little problem, and then people really will be able to walk on water. So looking forward to seeing that happen sometime in the near future.
You're, of course, familiar with the movie The Incredibles, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dash is their young kid who's like this, you know, is their version of the Flash. Dash
right.
is a speedster. He can run real fast. Don't you just love that instant where he runs on water for the first time?
Yeah, yeah.
And he realizes what he's doing, and that laugh that he gives when he realizes what he was doing, and that he was doing it, and he, you know, oh, I just love that. I hope the day comes. You know, somebody can do that for real. That'll be awesome.
It's a terrific scene, and I think prophetic of what we'll someday see people do, as is this video in its own snarky little way. Okay, Stephen, one more very fast because I got one to finish it off with.
Okay, let's see. Gamification of behavior and content generation. Gamification, of course, is a huge thing. It's been talked about for at least, about a year and a half, Phil?
Yeah, it's been big for the last year or two, yeah.
Yeah, and the idea is, of course, you know, if people think of an activity as a game, then, you know, they'll do amazing things in the context of a game, and content generation being part of it. If, you know, if for example, you had a game involved with, you know, where people are submitting wiki links or wiki articles or whatever, you know, all of a sudden people start doing it more. That apparently is going to become big in 2012. I don't quite foresee how that's implemented. Maybe you have some ideas on that, Phil.
Well, I think that it's sneaking up on us. We're seeing business models introduced in some ways. Companies like Groupon have shown us how like standard business transactions can be gamified, and we've looked at how financial management and weight loss and other things can be turned into kind of competitions, and people can gamify those. We're almost out of time though, Stephen, so we're gonna say yes. There's gonna be a lot of exciting developments around gamification. And finally, the number one item or number 12 item on the list to cap us off and give us all 12 thing I'm looking forward to in 2012, the world will not end. I have I'm making a promise to all of you for that. So for what brief snatch we're going to have of it, Stephen, what is our music this evening?
Revolution Now by Josh Woodward. And, of course, you can I'll put a link in the chat so you can hear it all, the chat room folks. So that's Revolution Now by Josh Woodward.
Revolution Now by Josh Woodward. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back again next week. And until then, live to see it.